So son, you're gonna drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving.
Natural burning, burning car.
Tell them it's your car and you do what you want with it.
I own this car, I do as I please. I also own the highway, my taxes pay for that. The boat's mine. I own the highway and I own the car. I own everything!
That's the rookie Suarez up and over Regan Smith, the big one out Daytona, the trial.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast.
Welcome to the Throwing Wrenches Podcast. I'm Daryl Scott.
And I'm Eric Stahl. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, we've been away for a little bit, and apologize for that. But, you know, life kind of gets in the way, but we're back in the saddle here, broadcasting from the comfy, cozy confines of...
I'm going to call it Studio B.
Studio B.
Yeah.
So it might sound a little different, but, you know, it's okay. It's a work in progress, and hopefully there's no dog barking or anything in the background.
Well, I can tell you also... traffic. I'm not used to traffic, Daryl, so yeah. I came from Tazewell County, Peoria County, and I'm traumatized right now, so if I sound a little disheveled, it's because I'm just not used to it.
Bridge and tunnel, folks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you making it over here, Eric. It's been too long, so just want to throw this out here. If you are not familiar with the Eric Stahl, Eric, why don't you tell the folks about yourself?
All right. So, yeah, my name's Eric Stahl. I'm a service manager at a local metro new car dealership, and I've done this job for about a decade, been in the car business since my mid-20s, and I come from a family of car people, so I like to race my little Celica on the weekends or climb my 4Runner out in the mountains during the summertime, so I'm pretty much all around in cars every day, all the time, 24/7.
Can't get enough of them. And I'm Daryl Scott. I'm a lifelong gearhead, mostly into the older stuff, but I like pretty much anything with wheels. I don't race anything anymore because not good. I might. I don't know. We'll see. Eric's trying to twist my arm. But this is kind of a little podcast we do where we just kind of highlight some of the local events, national news, anything of Petroliana, if you will. And we try to cover it here from our Central Illinois perspective.
And Daryl's being too kind. He knows everything about old cars all the time. So if you have any questions, just email him in. He knows it.
I'm good at telling what it is and what year it is and all that fun stuff. So
he's a walking Hemmings guide.
Right. Knowledge that got me nowhere in life, except here.
Got you this podcast.
It did. Well,
sweet digs we're working out of tonight.
We're glad everybody's here. One of the reasons I just want to say up front that folks might be interested in becoming a sponsor, hint, hint, of this lovely podcast is the fact that we will do your spot justice. We will do your product, your service, whatever good you might have, whatever wares you want to peddle. Think of Throwing Wrenches Podcast as your vehicle, wink, if you will.
Oh, nice.
It's dad joke time. I'm not even a dad, so I don't know where that came from.
But hey, this episode of Throwing Wrenches is sponsored by you.
That's right.
What could be better than that?
So give us a call. Shoot us an email. We are on the interwebs. You can like us on Facebook, subscribe, all that fun stuff, whatever feed reader you like to have.
And as usual, this is the podcast that Peoria deserves.
That's right. That's right. We're still working on the catchphrase, but the Kaizen, which means constant improvement, is the Japanese, one of many cool phrases in Japanese.
I think we've paid all the bills there with all this, right?
I think so.
So... it's been a long time. There's been a few people who've said, hey, where's the new show? Yeah. What's going on? My wife even said, are you and Daryl still recording?
Are you still friends? What happened?
Oh, it was a big out, honey.
I'll tell you what.
You won't believe what he said about you.
Just kidding.
So you've had some issues going on, and you certainly don't have to talk about them. But, you know, friends and family and pets and stuff certainly take precedence over the podcast. Want to share anything.
Yeah, basically the last month, the last 30 days have been real rough. Just on a personal note, my wife and I, we lost our longtime hound dog, Mabel.
She was a cutie. Took great pictures in your cars.
She loved to go for a ride. She was actually like the coolest dog to, you know, if I was out work, she wouldn't hang out in the garage when I was working.
No.
She'd get bored after like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But she loved to go for a ride because usually it meant we'd go get ice cream or go get, you know, like McDonald's burger or something. But
Pavlovian response.
That's right. Go places and eat things. That's what we like to do. But yeah, she was a great dog. She wound up having a tumor, and we had to do one of those things that every pet owner at some point is probably going to be faced with, where you get the bad news that, you know, things aren't going to go their way, and you got to do what you got to do. So we were we don't have kids, so my wife and I were really broken up about that. But, you know, we got 9 years worth of great memories and tons of goofy pictures. They're all over Facebook.
They are. It's great.
So, and everybody's been super supportive, you know, friends and family. Truly appreciate that. And then 2 weeks later, my mother-in-law passed away. So, you know, just that was, she was sick for a long time. And, you know, hopefully she's in a better place. I think we all are at peace with that. But kind of had to hit the pause button on life and work. And
I'm very sorry for that. And
thank you.
Yeah, I know you and your wife had a lot to deal with there. I can't even imagine. I don't look forward to those days I ever have to deal with that stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the deal, right? You know, so you move forward, and hopefully that, you know, you remember all the good times. You know, it's easy to get, when stuff like that happens, it's easy to go back in the, you know, the old Rolodex and be like, I should have done X, or I should have spent more here or there.
Yeah.
You know, the best advice is just, I think Warren Zevon said, enjoy every sandwich.
Exactly.
You know? And it's so true.
That's a great quote.
Just, you know, go out, do things, spend money, and it's all about those experiences you have with your family.
And you can't take it with you?
That's true. That's true.
Certainly can't take the sandwiches.
Well, I'd also, Well, the other thing I want to just throw out there, too, even folks like, you know, my wife and I, since we don't have a huge family of our own, it's like, oh, we don't have a will, we don't have all that, you know, it's not a big deal. It's like, it's important.
Yes.
Especially if you have possessions. I mean, I've heard Jay Leno talk about this, and it's kind of self-serving because we were talking about old cars.
Yeah.
But Jay and Mavis Leno don't have kids, and that question has come up for years. Like, you've got 300 or however many hundreds of vehicles that
Jay... got three Land Cruisers from what I just saw.
Yeah. It's like, what are you going to do with that when you pass? You don't have any heirs or anything like that. And he's like, no, we set it up in a trust. It's going to be a museum, and, you know, it'll be open to the public 365. And that's just one of those things. So even if you have a bunch of, quote, old stuff in the garage you don't think's worth anything, you know, make sure you get a will, put stuff in place, talk with your friends, family, loved ones, and make sure you got all of that stuff down on paper, because it's one of those adulting things nobody wants to talk about, but it all happens to, you know, it happens to all of us. So,
and I probably could get a sponsor with the KC Law Office in East Peoria on that.
Hi-yo. That's a call out. Let's see what we can do.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so what's been going on with you, Eric?
We talk about projects. What are we doing?
It's
been so long, and hey, not to make light of it too, but you know, if you had a car museum, you could probably get 3 days out of that thing a year, couldn't you?
Right, three, and then maybe another day for the junk in my basement.
All right, so I've been dying to talk about this, and so if I get a little geeky, just stop me, okay? But back in October, I took a couple friends and some employees and some customers down to Southern Cruiser Crawl. Down Hot Springs, Arkansas. That's the fourth year I've done this trip. And Southern Cruiser Crawl is a Toyota Land Cruiser event. Toyota Land Cruiser Association is a national organization that sponsors runs all across the country. They also do trail maintenance out at Rubicon and stuff like that. And they do charity stuff. But if you go to these events and you're a Toyota Land Cruiser Association member, you're insured, you know, you get some swag and stuff like that. This event down in Hot Springs is so weird because you're in the middle of what I would consider a redneck area of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't define redneck, but you would normally think, if I'm in Arkansas, I'm not going to see a bunch of Toyota Land Cruisers, a bunch of 4Runners and stuff like that. But you literally have these good old boys rolling up with these FJ40s from the 70s and 80s that they've chopped. 80s vintage Land Cruisers that have been hacked, you know.
And, all decked out.
Yeah, well, you name it. Some are mint, some are perfect, some of them are just all hacked up into pieces. And it is just a wild group. And every night they play country music, they serve Cajun food and barbecue. It's a good old time. So one of the reasons we go to this place, certainly there's great, great people, great atmosphere, and you start to make friends when you start doing these things year after year. But that park in Hot Springs, Hot Springs Off-Road Vehicle Park, used to be called Superlift. It literally can handle any weather condition. So we were there for 3 days, and it rained two of them. And normally, if you're wheeling and it's raining, you're like, oh God, this is a disaster.
Yeah.
But it's all shale rock. It's all just chunked up rock, and it could rain. It probably rained inches on us one day. We were still trail riding, having a great time.
Super muddy. It's just kind of, okay.
Trucks were clean when we came back in.
No kidding.
It's nuts.
Huh.
Fortunately this year we didn't tent camp. We normally do that, so that would have been the sucky part of all that rain.
Did you say Hot Springs?
Hot Springs.
Okay. That's become like a popular convention kind of tourist destination.
Well, they gotta do something.
Yeah. Ain't much else around
no,
there.
No, there isn't. I mean, have you ever been there?
I have not. Okay. I've not. I've heard it's fun, but I also heard Branson's fun.
You know? Yeah, well, it's... you and I are in the same way. God bless you, Branson lovers. Anyway, Hot Springs is a great old town. The 1920s, 1930s, when this hot spring craze was kind of going on. You ever watch The Roosevelts, actually, that documentary?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like medicinal properties.
Yeah, Franklin had a big one in West Virginia or something he went to all the time. But the hot springs were all the rage when they thought that they had medicinal purposes. Might be good for your back, Daryl.
Yeah, I could actually use that right about now.
Exactly. So there's this classic downtown area with classic buildings that they preserved. And the National Park isn't really a park. It's just a bunch of bathhouses in a row next to this little mountain that's still steaming off hot water. And it's actually, to me, it seems really dangerous. You have like all this hot water compressed just sitting there.
Just beneath the surface, ready to blow.
Exactly. Yeah. So you think the moon cycles make people crazy. I think all that hot water under me all the time make me crazy. But anyway, it's
a fun time, though.
It's a neat town. And so every year we go, we take a few more people. And it was great this year because even though it rained, the weather wasn't optimum. One of the guys who's been with me the last 3 years, he goes, "This was my favorite trip." And nice. I'm like, "Seriously?"
Of all the, because you've done Moab, right?
Oh,
you've
yeah.
Done
yeah.
All We've done kinds a, of stuff.
Yeah. Well, he didn't say favorite trip. It was his favorite trip to Hot Springs, which I was surprised by. But it's better than dust. When you're driving the trails and you have dust blown in on you all the time. Anyway. There was 200 trucks there. Like I said, tons of food, and they give free beer. You can't beat that.
I'm going to go buy a 4x4 right now.
Come on down with me next year, man. You're more than welcome to come down.
It'd be fun. I'd love to, because I don't know anything, the first thing about it. So
you would have a blast.
That'd be fun learning experience, yeah. For sure.
So they do collect proceeds, and they have a raffle, and the raffles are epic. I know sometimes at the new... I would say those car club meetings, they'll do like raffles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
This raffle, there had to be $20,000 worth of swag there.
Oh, wow.
And so I bought like $40 worth of tickets. And I walked out with $300 in swag. And
pretty impressive.
Yeah. All the proceeds go to an organization called F Cancer. And last year they helped a family out. They raised about $8,000 to help a family who was, you know, trying to get their kids cancer care kind of helped out. So
it's a good cause.
Yeah.
I like seeing that.
As far as trail damage goes, I was pretty easy. I didn't even realize it, but when I got home, I had the CV clamp. It was bad on the inside axle boot on my driver's side. So got the old Menards pipe clamp, got her locked in. She's good to
good
go.
Good to go for another 10,000 miles.
I probably should have installed some more grease in there before I did it, but at this point, it's going to be an axle enough right. At this point. She's running good.
Oh, good. I'm glad. That seems to be a great all-purpose rig. And yeah. tell folks what your trail rig slash daily driver is.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a 2010 Toyota 4Runner trail edition. It's got a 3-inch lift on it, some 35s. And it's a great car, except when you're driving through rush hour traffic to your house.
Yeah, it's... is any car good in traffic? I mean,
I don't know. I was wondering that as I was coming up here. I think my Prius, my wife's Prius, is probably optimal for traffic, right?
Yeah. It just kind of crawls and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get good fuel economy no matter what.
Yeah, it's a good vote. It's a good vote for that.
So, highly recommend that event. It's probably one of the best TLCA events. Well, certainly this side of Mississippi. There's not a whole lot that goes on this side of Mississippi.
Honestly, it's all out west.
Yep.
Yeah. What's the park in Indiana you go to a lot?
Badlands. It's in Attica, Indiana, and it's the scope and the size of that park in Hot Springs has got to be 50 times the size.
Oh wow!
It's much bigger.
Is that one up in the Indiana Dunes area?
No, but there are dunes there. It's on US 41. It's a cool drive because it's got all the old houses from US 41. So it's almost like that was like an old pioneer trail, US 41. So there's these old what do you call those, salt box houses.
Mm-hmm.
Along that road, and if you know what you're looking at, the architecture stuff, you'll know that you're from an area that's from an era that's kind of gone. But no, it's on US 41, south of the Great Lakes, probably 100 miles, 150 miles.
Nice. Well, that's you certainly get around, and I applaud you because you know there's a lot of folks that have really nice decked out 4x4s that don't do anything except go to Home Goods or, you know, some other, you know, Red Lobster parking lot.
There's nothing wrong with that, I guess.
No, no. But at the same time, you know, it's you actually use your vehicle for what it's intended for. So
I'm losing my mic, Darryl.
Yeah, yeah. These conditions. I don't know how you
I may have to hold my mic by the time it's all over. It's
got a mic stand issue here.
Yeah, but, I was watching myself fade as I'm like leaning into it. Sorry.
That's okay. Well, speaking of...
So you had stuff. I mean, what are you working on?
Well, not so much stuff anymore. Just getting ready for winter, winterizing stuff. That the old cars that I store, I don't do stable. I don't do any of the crazy, you know, fuel additives or anything like that. I just basically top off the tanks and throw a cover, crack the windows, and get some ventilation in there, and then come back at it when there's no salt on the road. And I've never had an issue. I know there's a couple schools of thought about fuel stabilization, and, you know, I've never had... issues with that, but
I like what you were saying about just pull the battery terminals and just let it set, right?
Just leave it. Yeah, if you really want to get crazy, I mean, some of the older cars, you know, you might need to fog it, you know, throw some fogging oil down the carb and then shut it off.
What's a carburetor, Daryl?
I don't know. It's a mysterious thing from the past.
My mower's got one. My four-wheeler has one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, pretty soon I think mowers are probably going to be fuel-injected or just all outlawed and be electric. But
probably the latter.
Probably. The other thing I like to do before winter is just kind of make sure all the seals are greased up, you know, weather stripping, because... You know, we've all had those moments where you don't start the car up and defrost it, and then you yeah. can't get in the car because the doors are frozen shut, and that's never good. So I found my secret is just a little bit of silicone spray on all the seals, and make sure your locks are all greased up. I mean, all that stuff that growing up in the Midwest, you should just kind of instinctively do, but you probably just, I don't know, there's not an official thing. I mean, back in the day, it was probably a little more
I've had guys regimented. Who like... Stabil must have done something in the 70s to like make every guy believe that that was what you had to do.
Yeah.
It must have been a massive marketing campaign at some point.
Maybe. And then nowadays, of course, too, you hear all the ethanol. Oh, there's so much water. It'll...
But I've heard ethanol is actually better in some ways for this stuff.
I've never had an issue either way. So I don't know. We'll probably get some, you know, let us know what your experience is. Do you do some big, you know, ritualistic thing before you put your cool stuff away for the winter? You know, for right now, shoot it with some fluid film or whatever rust-proofing du jour you might have. Fluid film is all over. Speaking of marketing, have you seen those ads?
So it was funny. We sold a 4Runner this last week to a guy, and he's like, hey, what do you think about fluid film? And I'm like, where's this coming from?
Yeah, yeah. It's Canadian.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and it's because Canadians back in the day, you see a lot of nice cars from Canada, and you're like, how?
That's the salt. They don't use salt, though, do they?
Well, some, like around the, you know, around the Great Lakes. But, like, yeah, you go to Alberta and stuff like that. It's, you know, they're clean as a whistle. But the guys that usually preserve the stuff up there, they used to keep the old oil, used motor oil, and just spray the undercarriage of the cars with them.
Yeah.
Well, eventually, that kind of became an environmental issue.
Yeah, the rainbow pavement everywhere.
Yeah. So that's the only thing I worry about with that fluid film and other rust-proofing things that are... fluid rather than, you know, a spray on like wax type stuff,
mm-hmm.
is that, yeah, eventually it does end up back, you know, in the lakes and rivers and streams, which is not good.
So. Yeah. No. So I've known about fluid film. I know some guys who are really, they love it. I can tell you this, when my guys have to service a car with fluid film on it, they hate your guts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause yeah. it is disgusting and messy underneath there. So it's okay for an oil change, but man, the minute you got to touch anything else. On the flip side though, if you need to adjust a bolt that's been, you know, preserved, generally speaking, it's in much better condition. So.
Good call.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's basically where I'm at with projects. What else is going on here?
I don't know, so what's up with the speed pass? What are you talking about on this thing?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of the car washes here locally are doing this thing where instead of, we had a, last 10 years or so, we've had an abundance of the $3 car washes pop up.
Have we? Okay.
Well, in Peoria, I think there's three of them now.
I don't think there's any in Pekin. Although they're building a car wash just up the road from us.
That might be, it's... You know, we've had a local one here called Red Carpet, and they do the full service, you know, yeah. the old school, like, you know, dudes dry your stuff off and you tip them and whatever. And they've been doing a great job for a long time. But the $3 car wash is basically an automatic car wash, and then they have a bunch of free vacuums out front. And their whole thing was, hey, it's $3, and you get the works, and then you can use our free vacuums.
Oh, there's one on Allen, isn't there? Up
yeah.
there off of... Route 6.
Or... Allen, there's one on Sterling, and I think there's one on Knoxville now, too.
I've seen it. I was up there at PIP. Mm-hmm. Getting our car with the wrap. Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, I mean, they do a
good
job.
It's really $3?
$3. It's enough to rinse your stuff off. So in the wintertime, if you just need something quick and dirty, or quick and clean, I guess you can go there. But what they started doing was selling a speed pass. So they give you the full works for like $18 a month. So you can go through on as many times as you want. Which is just a license to do stupid stuff like wash your car every 2 days.
Yeah.
So at some point, I won't have any paint left. And I know...
It's brushless, isn't it? Or is it?
No, the one in Allen has got
that's
the,
why it's $3.
The old slappy brushes.
Yeah. Something like the guy in front of you comes through after wheeling with me.
Right. Just a bunch of granite chunks falling off.
Then they sandpaper your car when it goes through there.
I'll say I'm not a huge fan of the brush car washes, yeah. But... they seem to do a decent job. If you got a daily you don't really give a rip about, who cares? As long as it's clean.
Is there such a thing, Daryl, in your garage?
I don't know. I care too much, Eric. I care so much I do dumb things.
Now, when you buy more cars, do you find you have to share your love more, or do you just have more love to give? I mean,
no, I have less, and everything falls into a state of disrepair, and I get depressed. But, you know, that's not why you called.
No, that's not why we're doing the podcast.
So let's talk about Southern Illinois. And when I say Southern Illinois, I'm not talking about, you know, the place with Superman or some of the other...
Metropolis,
or the prison.
Yeah,
I'm talking about Carbondale. What's going on down at SIU?
Now, I don't remember if we talked about it or not on a show a couple episodes ago, but SIU has a pretty strong automotive program. And I was down there for aviation for my daughter. She's touring the school, and Southern's making a hell of a bid... you know, try and get her to go down there.
Nice.
But the cool thing is they call it their transportation center. And so we had to go out to the airport and to view the transportation center. And it's a brand new building. It's gigantic. It's three floors. Beautiful building. And it's lined with new Cadillacs that are half torn apart. And nice. There's classrooms on either side. There's even the Toyota training area.
Oh, they sponsor it or something.
Yeah, apparently. But what I loved... we'll get into some of this curriculum stuff, but at one point we're walking down this beautiful hallway, and I look over to my left, and I see the windows of a classroom, and I see probably 25, 30 kids all standing there with their safety glasses, with their own workbenches made of black, almost like a lab, and they all got something torn apart, and they're all, it looked like power steering racks, something like that, and they're all looking at their instructor, and I'm like, that is so cool. It reminded me of like, when I was a kid, we dissect frogs, you know, and we're like all doing our thing, but then we're looking up at the professor or whatever, seeing what's going on. Mm-hmm. And it was pretty amazing. I've been to ICCs, and maybe at some point we should get Todd Fortier on the show because he runs that program up there.
Yeah, you said you're impressed with that too.
Yeah, right? It's good, but this was on a much larger scale from what I could tell, and they've spent a lot of money on it. You know, that is at the airport, so at some point we went out in the hangars. Looked at all the planes. They had to have 30 planes for the students.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, something neither here nor there for the automotive, but it was impressive.
I can imagine. Like the little, like Cessnas and Pipers and stuff? Okay.
Yeah.
Single engine.
Yeah, but the automotive section, it just blew. I didn't expect that. I knew I was going to their technology center. I knew it was their vocational area, but mm-hmm. pretty darn cool.
Well, and that's neat. And we talked a little before the show. When people talk often, you know, there's kind of been in the last 5 years or so a resurgence in awareness that, hey, the skilled trades.
The micro effect.
The micro effect. And, you know, for what it is, I think it's good to at least kind of keep talking about that. Because there is a huge shortage in a lot of industries. But you hear it mostly when it comes to construction or household or electrical or things like that. You don't really hear it when it comes to automotive. I think there's still kind of that stigma that, you know, if you're a mechanic, well, that's not such a glamorous job or something. And that couldn't be further from the truth. Because, first of all, the amount that you pay in labor per hour in some of these, you know, dealerships nowadays, I mean, it's up there. And that's because they're not just a quote-unquote grease monkey, okay?
No,
it's not just somebody jocking a, you know, a thing of fluid film underneath the car. you're actually, you know, you're trained, and you can attest to this, Eric. I mean, there's so many computerized systems. There's so much diagnostic skill that goes into that. And then you also have to be a mechanic on top of it.
It's nuts. And I've had doctors come in and tell us before that our job is actually harder than being a doctor in some ways. As far as how they have to cover everything. If you're a doctor, you can specialize in something.
Right.
You know, my guy's got to know everything.
Yeah.
You know, they got to know tire problems all the way through electronic problems. We had a car in this actually today we're working on it. We're trying to figure out some problems we're having with the heating cooling controls. There's diagnostic trouble codes now, even in the heating head.
Wow.
On this car. So you have to take those trouble codes. They're sent back to the manufacturer. They see that. And tomorrow we're going to do some test driving while raising and lowering the temperature of the car to see if the servo motors are reacting fast enough. It's nuts.
Pretty specialized.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just one of those things you got to know on any given day.
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal.
Well,
the biggest thing is when I talked at ICC a couple of years ago, and I was terrible, by the way. If you were there, I apologize. But
I don't believe that.
The biggest thing to me was, I'm glad you're at ICC, and I'm glad you're at vocational school. I think it's great that you're learning stuff. And I think the biggest testament as an employer to me is that not only have you shown you have the ability to learn, but you're going to have the capacity to learn, because what's going to happen here when we have that inflection point to electric cars, yeah. I need to know that the guys I have the ability to upgrade their minds and train themselves. I don't need guys who just, grew up under a shade tree working on carburetors, because that guy may not be flexible when the time comes.
Right.
So I think tech school shows a discipline, mm-hmm. and it's certainly valuable as an employer.
Well, cool. Yeah, I definitely want to follow up with that. So, I think we could probably maybe twist Todd's arm to come on here from ICC at some point.
I actually think we could start. I can think of a couple people anymore that we could start getting on the show. So
sounds good. We're going to have some guests. I don't know. It could be you. Let us know.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. Speaking of vehicle repairs, you always have some wonderful stories. Customers of the week. And I think it's been a couple weeks, so you might have a couple.
You want me to give you two?
Let's do two.
All right, I'll give you two. So the one that makes me laugh the most, we had a gal the other day, and I'm not ditching on my customers. I love my customers, man. I tell you what, I go to work every day. I can't wait to talk to my customers. Some of them, right now we're being stressed. We got some serious stuff going on as far as
the
operating system and the holidays. And man, I tell you what, people are in freak out mode. We're in freak out mode. So it's been kind of bizarre. But anyway, so I share these just as examples of customers, and maybe you recognize these people, but sometimes it's fun. I had one the other day. Customer came in, older gal, probably 80. She had a coupe, nice little car. She needs two tires. And so my service advisor went in the waiting room, grabbed her, brought her outside, showed her she needed two tires. And she just starts, oh, I can't believe I need this. I can't believe this. And in the next 10 minutes, she has a complete meltdown in the waiting room.
About the cost or what?
Yes, I can't afford these tires. And oh my God, I can't believe I need this. I've seen this before so many times. And I've actually seen customers. I saw a girl weeping one time because of her bill. And somebody else paid her bill in the waiting room. And
are you serious?
Like, yes.
Oh, man.
I've seen it. And that wasn't that long ago.
I got to try that.
So what bothers me more about it, though, is when she got home, her kid calls me the next day and says, hey, can you get those tires for my mom's car?
Yeah.
She blew up my waiting room with a freak
made
out.
A scene. Well, and that's always weird, too, because then the people drinking coffee and waiting, watching Judge Judy waiting for their stuff to get fixed are like, oh, what just happened here?
Exactly.
And you guys had nothing to do with it. It's like you're trying to do a proactive thing and like, hey, it's winter.
Yeah.
Winter's coming. Get some tires.
We're not attacking old ladies, man. I tell you what. It just...
shame on you.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, so I called that one the freak out. But, God bless her. She got the tires a couple days later. And, yeah, she's sweet as pie. But who knows? Who knows?
Weird. You never know people's backstory either.
Yeah, you don't. So the other one, and I thought that it was funny. I made some notes about this. And so I think this one kind of resonated with you.
Yeah.
I had a guy in the other day, and he has a premium luxury car, top-of-the-line luxury car. And calls us up looking for an estimate. Then, he takes it to the Jiffy Lube, calls us for a tire price, takes it to Costco or Sam's, and he's just always calling and asking for an estimate on this, estimate on that.
Is it the price match? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, or beat it.
Yeah.
Beat it. Hey, I'm going to go Jiffy Lube and get that cheap oil change, but I'm driving a $70,000 car. I just don't get it.
And
don't get me wrong here. I think I was pretty vulgar about it. It's like, you just trade it in, buy a Cobalt, buy an Accent. just do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Dude, just get out of that car. Because I'm not trying to be the guy that says you have to pay big bucks for your service or for your parts or anything like that. But I think you have to acknowledge, if you thought that car is a top-of-the-line car, you should acknowledge that factory parts or close to them, Bosch parts or whatever,
sure,
equivalent replacement parts, would be of value on your car. And putting a Fram oil filter on there over at the Quick Lube stop with some Quaker State,
Not
even
same.
Though you're saving, I mean, you're saving $25 or whatever, not helping your car, not keeping your car what you anticipate, what you bought.
Right.
It blows my mind.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, if you have the money, you can make the payment or you can pay cash for it, you know, maintain it and protect that investment.
Yeah.
Like you said, there's, you know, put a Fram filter and some conventional motor oil in a Lexus. I mean, it's stupid.
Stupid. I sometimes feel like, well, you're in the industry, so you're jaded. Okay, I probably am a little bit, but I'm watching this from the sidelines going, what are you doing to this the mechanical work of art here?
Right.
You know.
Especially if they buy it new. You're like, unless they're traded in 2 years. Then some poor bastard gets a nice car.
Yeah.
And things fall apart, things sludged up and seized because they're running the cheap stuff in it.
Yeah. You tell them over and over, needs time belt, I'll get to it. I'm like, dude.
And grenades. That'll be $6,000 for an engine now instead of a $600 repair.
Yeah, so that's Eric's rant zone. If you have any customers, you have ideas about, I would, you know, if you want my feedback on it, please send them over to me. I still have a couple more we're going to save for future shows.
Tuck those away for next time.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's take a look at some news. We're gonna skip international news, are we? Yes.
We can.
Do we have anything?
Well, you had about profile. I mean, you're right. No, let's go right to national. Daryl.
Sorry.
Right.
So we're gonna talk about the country that matters, America.
America. With a U.
Well, we're gonna actually talk about some stuff that I saw on CNN's website. Hashtag fake news and all. There's a profile.
Jim Acosta, fake news.
Profile of Icon Motors out of California. Some of you might have seen the Icon derelict cars that Jay Leno's featured, because I guess he's got one or his buddies with the dude or whatever. But it's basically a company out in California. It started building 4x4s, and then they got into taking old cars with patina from out west that aren't total rusted out boxes of garbage like we have here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
And they got something, you know, like a 48 Buick. I think they took a 48 Buick convertible and put it on a newer chassis and LS1 motor and, you know, all new tech. But the thing still looks like an old car for the most part. They're also doing some electrical stuff, which is kind of neat.
I didn't know they were doing electrical.
Yeah, it's kind of new for them. It's interesting. If you go to icon4x4.com, you can see all their stuff. It definitely works out west. If you're in Arizona, New Mexico, you could pull that off. Here in the Midwest, I see a lot of guys that will take something old, pull it out of a field, put a new motor in it, and then they clear coat over the rust.
The patina, yeah.
It doesn't work here. I mean, it does for a little bit, but it's such a humid, especially or here or down south, it's just such a climate that it's not conducive to that. It's neat. They're pretty cool, but at the end of the day, I think that's definitely a West Coast thing.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if I put this on there or you put it on there, but the chopping VINs to avoid safety inspections. This is the misnomer on these things. So Icon makes an amazing Bronco.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Like the old 60s Bronco.
Yes. So they take the old. Actually, I think I saw one at the Pekin Cruise in here, that blue one.
Yeah.
Or was it red? I don't remember.
There's a blue, a red, and a yellow one that shows up.
Gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous truck. So Icon will take one, and they'll do all the upgrades, and they put like that really eerie gray paint on them and everything. Mm-hmm. It looks so badass. But the big thing is if you chop a VIN, and you could literally just have the VIN tags on the door and the VIN tags from the body, and you could slap this on this car, and you could have all new metal everywhere.
Yeah.
But basically, when you go to the DMV, especially in California, this is important, you're going to avoid the emissions testing, mm-hmm. and you're going to avoid the safety tests. So the car could be anything. And God bless Icon, I think they're a reputable company. But anybody and their brother who chops cars, stuff like that, this is one of the oldest tricks in the book. And Land Cruiser guys have been doing it for a long time, you know, when they modify and they build stuff. So let's just get a VIN, and then we could build a cart around this VIN mm-hmm. and just make whatever we want that's road legal.
So it's like a homemade custom vehicle VIN. And, yeah, it's not – there's all kinds of loopholes with that. Because if you did register it as an older car, I mean, you'd have to have the title, paperwork. There's a lot of stuff, especially in really rough shape, that you could get for real cheap because it doesn't have any paperwork.
Yeah.
And for folks like that, it doesn't matter. We'll just –
I think for California, it's got to be the emissions testing. That's got to be the reason you're doing it so much.
Get around it. Yeah. I forget what the cutoff is. I think it's 65 or something. It's old.
Is it really?
Yeah, because they started putting pollution control devices on those cars like in the 60s out in California.
Really?
Yeah, like PCV valves and all that.
Huh.
So, yeah, interesting stuff.
Yeah, no, it's pretty cool. Icon4x4.com, check it out. Actually, there's so much eye candy on that website. you'll want to trade and buy something. Now, they're not the ones. I think Redline Land Cruisers built like a giant four-door FJ40 with this big diesel motor. It sits like on a 12-inch lift. And
I'm going to look that up now.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it's all aluminum chassis. And I think, I mean, these Icon vehicles run $100,000, $120,000.
Yeah, right? They're not cheap.
Yeah, and the Redline Land Cruiser, I think, is like $400,000 or something.
Well, you know.
If Jay Leno needs a place to tuck his money, there's always somebody out there.
You know how you could save money? It's just use Fram oil filters on it.
You could.
Save so much money.
I never thought about that. So I buy the $400,000 car, then I skimp on service later on.
That's great. Yeah, yeah. No problems there.
You have solved my conundrum for expensive cars.
Let's talk about cars that drive themselves here.
Yeah. So this may be old news to you, but you know, a month ago, this was pretty hot stuff here. So autonomous cars are coming to the nation's capital. Ford announced on Monday at a couple Mondays ago, it began testing self-driving cars in the streets of Washington, D.C. early next year, with a particular emphasis on equitable deployment. I don't even know what that means.
So it's not just going to rich people? Is that?
I'm not sure what equitable deployment means.
Beta testers? I don't know.
So to this point, I mean, the woman who was killed by the Uber in Arizona,
yeah,
is that where it was at?
Mm-hmm.
That's probably been the biggest condemnation of autonomous cars to date.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't think there's been anything else really that scathing since.
I think there's like two. There was another one that was similar to that, but I can't remember when that was. But I think it was another pedestrian car incident. She was the big high-profile one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, those two are kind of the low marks.
Yeah, so I think that Washington, D.C. is a great place to let those things run out. I mean... They kill a senator. I'm sorry. I should never said
Ouch.
That.
Harsh.
If somebody with a political agenda happens to get in the way of one of these things, they definitely will be the ones making the legislation on it. So it's probably the best place for them to try them out, right?
I guess. Well, I love the way Eric thinks. Now, it's interesting, though. I mean, for a testing ground, some of the worst traffic. I know there's like Houston, there's L.A.
Oh, yeah.
But D.C. traffic is, I mean, everybody that goes out there, they always say, don't even bother. Take the metro in. Don't even bother driving.
How could an autonomous car drive to Dulles Airport and get back to the Capitol? I mean, could you just imagine that car? I think even the car would get frustrated just overheating.
It would. Yeah. It would just go off and peel off and go to a Taco Bell or something.
It'd be like an Uber driver's like, I've made a poor decision in careers.
Well, I don't know. I'd like to at least see it try. So it's interesting to see.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that story. The autonomous cars are constantly going to be a story here anyway.
Absolutely, because they're coming. They're coming for you.
They are.
All right, we're going to throw a little bit of vintage here.
Yeah, I like this. This is a hardcore switch right here.
Yeah, we're going to go from Tomorrowland to Frontierland. anybody has an old car or at least has watched some of the Spike TV car shows on the weekend has probably heard an ad for Coker Tire. Coker is a vintage tire replica company that bought the old molds from like Goodyear and U.S. Royal and B.F. Goodrich, Silvertown, all those cool old white walls you see on older cars, and even old military vehicles, the old balloon-style tires on old bicycles. You name it, this company has remanufactured it since 1958, because over time, you know, bias-ply tires were replaced by radials, and tire technology changed. And if you have an older period-correct restoration on a car, you don't want to just put like some Goodyear Vivas from Walmart on it.
Yeah.
You know, you want to make it look good.
Well, that guy who with his luxury car would. You know.
Yeah. How much can I get here at Farm Fleet? But a guy that runs it nowadays is a guy named Corky Coker, which is a great name.
That is a great name.
He was here in Peoria for the Great Race, the Hemmings Great Race. He was like the ambassador of this thing.
How long ago was that?
2013, I think.
Really?
Yeah, they had a stop at the Gateway Building, and I went and stalked him. And afterwards, I like shook his hand and talked to him, and... He was cool. He was a super cool guy.
But yeah, that's cool.
Family run business. His dad started it in the 50s, and him and his brother, I think, and mom owned it until recently, where they sold it to the Kawasaki Group, like an investment group, who's kind of been running it partially.
So that's not like Kawasaki Motors, or
I don't know. Okay. I want to say it is kind of from that same family, but I'm not quite sure. No sale price was announced, so I'm not quite sure what the kind of money they made, but I think it marks a turning point. I think there's a lot of those older industries that cater to the classic car folks that are this kind of the changing of the guard. I know another couple of places that I order parts from out east have changed hands in recent years, and the service and the quality of the parts have changed because for the market's getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, it's all getting consolidated.
It is. So, I mean, kudos to them. I hope they made out okay, but I also hope that we can still...
Oh, Corky is on the Mediterranean right now.
He's kind of just... He bought Crete, the island of Crete.
Yeah, know. Well, maybe not right now. Maybe he's in Australia right now, but he'll be back. He'll be on the Med.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I just hope I can get some white walls.
All right. Did you see the Rivian social media push this last week?
Yeah, it was like a big announcement in 2 days or 3 days.
Yeah, we must be a day short on the big... Maybe they're going to wait for like Thanksgiving for the big announcement, but...
Nobody'll
so
hear.
It was like a lot of guys, of course, all these buff guys and, you know, people looking at things, and maybe you see like an angle of a car in the background, just enough to be like, hey, what is that? And at the last second, this car like shoots off into the wilderness or something like that, but you can't see what the hell it is. So
it's like a Twin Peaks episode, basically.
It was a little bit. I didn't see the log lady walking around anywhere.
No.
Oh, but and Kyle MacLachlan might have been one of those guys, but he's looked better, so I don't think he fit in there. Rivian's interesting. If you haven't been following along, they are the guys who bought over the Mitsubishi plant Bloomington,
that's
and
right.
they've taken up a bunch of space over there. So on one side, you have a million Volkswagens still being renovated because of the diesel scam.
Yeah, they're storing it. They're getting a little bit of rent from that parking lot there.
Yeah, that's what's powering Rivian right now. And then inside, in veiled secrecy, something is going on inside this factory. I mean,
yeah,
I'm still wondering, because Rivian kind of floated in here. We still think there possibly is a scam possibility, but
we'll see. I'm just waiting for Willy Wonka to come out through the gates and do a little pratfall and let people in to see the world of pure imagination that is Rivian.
Yeah, we talked about the last couple episodes ago when that guy was interviewed on CNN or something like that.
Pretty young CEO, right?
Yeah.
Fairly young
guy. I mean, I think he's just like an Elon Musk type guy. He's a cult of personality. I think it's like one of those Jim Jones things. I think they kind of draw people in. And once you get sucked into that cult of personality, you're just like, all right, I'll do anything for this guy.
I'll drink this Kool-Aid.
Dude, years ago, I left the dealership and I went to a Seattle company during the big IPO days of the 2000s. And our CEO of our company that I was working for literally was like a cult leader. He had people just nodding in agreement and would fall. They'd walk off cliffs for this guy because they just thought he was a second coming. And I think
interesting
that happens a lot with some of these type of personalities.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely have some swagger. But the Rivian guy, unlike Elon, he's kind of been quiet, though. I mean, he's out there now in the last year or so. But
well, he doesn't have PayPal money backing him up, I don't think.
Yeah, he's the billions in the bank. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But we'll be watching Rivian. Check out their social media. They've been all over Facebook and stuff like that. So
yeah.
We'll see what the big announcement is.
So do we want to try the moment of Musk, even though we're in Studio B and we don't have the sound effects?
We don't have our record player, so we can't cue that up. But let's go ahead and pretend it's playing. And we'll do the hold on a second here.
All right.
We'll do the...
get the echo?
Yeah, I think I can do this here. Go ahead.
The moment of Musk.
It was close.
It was close. All right. So Elon Musk tweeted that the Boring Company will unveil a stretch of rapid transit tunnel under Los Angeles to the public on December 10th. You can take your skateboard, your bike, or whatever. You can run around down there and have a good time. The company has previously termed it the test tunnel in the southern suburbs of Hawthorne between downtown Los Angeles and Torrance. It demonstrates the company's loop system. People are whisked through the system's tunnels at up to 150 miles an hour. They travel on a platform, potentially, they call it the skate, and the device comprises of a vehicle carrying up to 16 passengers or a car that is driven onto it.
Is this real life?
I don't know anymore, man.
Every time I read something about this, it's like it's something out of a Ray Bradbury book or something.
What's funny to me is you're going to drive your car to the entrance of the tunnel and then whisk your car through the tunnel. So at what point does that save anything? I mean, if you're the uber rich, you know, this is great for you. You're going to whisk your car downtown Los Angeles and you're going to whisk it back out when you're done for the day.
I guess it shaves a couple hours off your commute.
I think you could probably get a little helicopter and just land somewhere on a rooftop and probably be cheaper and faster. I don't know.
It probably would be. You know, folks, we enjoy this segment probably more than anyone else. But if you do enjoy our moment of Musk, let us know. If you'd like some comments, share some of your thoughts about the future of weird technology from beyond. And I think we need to close this with the theme song.
This has been your moment of Musk.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, no problem. I enjoy that. Now, that was car related because he did say you could put a car on the skate. That's the only reason I let that story slip in here, okay?
It's a stretch, Eric. I'll allow it. All right, so let's get to the questions of the week. We've got a couple where we talk about Eric's frustration. Eric's really, really mad lately with traffic and people's behavior in vehicles in said traffic. And you actually gave a name to it. Is this a name that you came up with?
No, there was a big thing. How Stuff Works put a video out about the zipper method for merging.
So construction zones, everyone's familiar with those. You got two lanes of traffic, they merge into one.
Yeah.
For like 2 miles, there's, you know, left lane ends, left lane is ending.
Yeah, but it seems like it never, you get to that point. And then so everybody's always trying to crowd in before that, maybe a quarter mile. And then you got some people like, oh, I'm going to stay halfway out so I keep people from going around me.
Yeah.
And so this social media video said basically if everybody gets to the merge point and does the zipper method, then it's the most equitable way and it actually moves the fastest. I guess the problem is everybody always feels like they got it's considerate to move over to the side you know is going to be open.
Yeah.
So everybody moves over, and then you hate those guys who wait till the last second and drive all the way up to the front for the zipper method, because there must have been something somewhere that programmed everybody, or maybe in driver's ed when we were kids, it said, you know, be courteous, get over, and be prepared to merge. What something was programmed, is because everybody does it, but there's some people who never learn that.
No,
and they just drive to the very bitter end. And in Chicago rush hour traffic, you know this better than anybody who live up in the suburbs.
Mm-hmm.
They just always drive to the very front and just stick their nose in there and just trying to weasel in. And you hate those people, but you know what? They're always getting there faster than everybody else.
Yeah, they shave a lot of time off. What I love is when the semis will just block that lane forever.
Yeah.
Another semi lets the guy in. They just run interference on him.
Yeah.
And, yeah, the whole time I'm just like, yeah, there's a big line behind it.
Yeah.
I love that.
So I think the reason I added this one on here is because I was coming back from Hot Springs, and 55 had a horrible backup. As a matter of fact, I was using Waze. I was down by, it was south of Springfield, probably about 30 minutes.
Yeah, they were striping. They were doing something there.
There was a bridge that was out or something. It went down to one lane. And there was an accident. As I later found out, a guy with a Honda van was pulling a trailer, and somebody hit it, and his dirt bike fell off it. So then, of course, everybody backs up for that. Well, had I listened to Waze and turned off at the intersection before, I would have been fine. But Waze said, oh, traffic ahead, 8-minute delay or whatever. I'm like, 8 minutes, I can handle that. Well, as I sat there, it went up 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 50-minute delay. I literally sat in a 50-minute delay. I was about ready to get in my 4Runner. I was about ready to just drive through the median and do a U-turn down in there just to get out. But then I'm like, there'll probably be a cop sitting up there waiting to pull me over.
You'd get a $300 ticket or something.
Yeah, so that's when I remembered the zipper method, and I thought, you know what? What's everybody else think? Am I the jerk, or should we all start doing that?
No, I think that should be a crime punishable by, I don't know, something horrible and medieval. And also, just a side note to that, if I do see construction zone signs, I actually want to see construction happening. Not the thought of it, not the
closed for the weekend.
It's the thought that counted. Right, yeah, we're only going to work like 2 days a week and 5 hours. And I know you guys are out there, road construction folks, they bust their humps. I'm not getting on you guys.
And it's dangerous.
It is extremely scary. But yeah, there's also been a whole lot of construction, like here in Peoria. Northmore was closed for like the third year in a row. Oh, construction, we're working on the road. They've spent an entire season just burying like fiber optic lines.
Oh boy.
And so they opened it back up and it's craters and it's it's terrible. And I'm like, what were they working on? And it turns out it's just like a little bit there. I don't know. Maybe after 10 years it'll be
Notice driving up this way tonight that the Creve Coeur Hill is quite beautiful. They've done a great job. You know, it's all nice black black pavement. Mm-hmm. Just looks beautiful up there, so.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so it is the holiday season, right, Eric?
Do we want to get into the holiday theme? We're just going to hop right in. We hope to do another show for Christmas.
We might. We can skip this. Do you want to do Cars of the Week? I don't know.
Yeah, let's do this. We got all here. Daryl, we haven't hung out in so long.
I know.
What the heck?
All right. All right. Let's talk about your Yuletide.
This is you rubbing off on me completely, by the way.
Old junk?
Yes.
Okay. Eric likes old stuff now.
Daryl would like this car. I know he would.
White Christmas, one of everybody's favorite holiday films, right? Bing Crosby.
Yeah. And Danny F. and K, according to Chevy Chase.
That's right.
Yeah. I watched it this weekend. We did Christmas cookies and decorations, and first I watched Better Off Dead, which is a Christmas movie.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
And yes, just then, like Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
My wife read a book while I watched it. I didn't care. And then we watched White Christmas. And it's not even Thanksgiving. I'm not even a Christmas guy, really, in a lot of ways. I'm a bah humbug kind
of
guy.
I couldn't have seen that.
I'm not really a fan of it. As a matter of fact,
I bet you are.
I look forward to working on Black Friday so that way I don't have to put the Christmas tree with the family.
Cold as ice. No, you're an old softie.
Yeah, whatever. So anyway, so we watched White Christmas. And I don't think, I think I've noticed this car maybe for the last 20 years I've watched the movie, but I saw it in a whole new light, Daryl, like I said, potentially because of you.
Yeah. Happy to rub off.
Yeah, when Bing and Danny Kaye show up to Pine Tree, Vermont, and they go to the resort to see the old sergeants or the generals.
Yeah.
General's place. They pull up in a 1950 Plymouth station wagon deluxe special. And this thing's got the wood walls. It's got the beautiful fender panels.
Luggage rack on the top.
Yeah. And these big saucers for wheel covers. And there's just something that car. First off, I wish we had architecture like that in the new cars. Why are rounded fender flares out of style? I mean, I would think for aerodynamics, they're not that far out of line, are they?
No, I mean, some of the older cars of the 30s and 40s weren't that aerodynamically off, but they weren't obviously what they are today. But yeah, compared to some of the later stuff, absolutely.
Yeah.
But that is a beautiful car, and I know Woody's are always popular. It doesn't matter if it's a California surf wagon or a hot rod or an old original or something like this where it's got a little bit of... You know, it had a job, so it's got a little logo.
Yeah,
the inn on the door.
The Columbia Inn sign on the side of it.
Yeah, and it's all the back's all scuffed up because a suitcase is coming and going. I mean, that'd be a fun car to have.
So I do know how the movie ends. So while I'm watching the movie, I pulled up the Internet Movie Car Database, which I learned about on this show a couple episodes ago, and looked it up. And then I went, because I didn't know what kind of car it was, Daryl, frankly. Sorry.
That's okay.
And then I Googled this model, and apparently Sotheby's had one here in 2017 for sale. It went for about $22,000, which honestly, I mean, it looked in pretty... It was in good shape.
Was it?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely daily driver. You wouldn't do that, but it was that nice.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, $22,000 for a play car like that?
That's not bad.
You could go to any car show and... You'd definitely be a star.
Some of the older Fords and Mercurys and stuff, like the late 40s, early 50s, those are going for close to six digits now.
Really?
Which is insane. But yeah, they truly were, at least I know a lot more about GM stuff of this era, they were truly coach-built cars up until the early 50s. You know, they actually would ship them as a cab and chassis almost, like you get the cowl, you know, the front end, the cowl, and the rear fenders, and then it would go to a coach builder, and they would do the wood body for the cars.
Hmm.
You know, nice Conley leather seats and things that would hold up. The challenge with restoring those, obviously, is you got to be a mechanic and a woodworker.
Yeah.
So that's why a lot of them are, you don't see as many of them because they just kind of, frankly, rotted.
Oh, yeah. I can't imagine that vehicle lasting around here. It would definitely fall apart.
Yeah.
So it was cool. So, and this is where Eric gets into a tangent because...
did you go into the rabbit hole? And
I did a little bit because I'm like, you know, that reminds me of that time that my wife and I went to Glacier National Park and we rode those red trucks from the airport to...
To the big buses.
Yeah, really cool. So I had to go down that rabbit hole and go into Wikipedia, and they're called the Red Jammers. And it was kind of cool. These are like an industrial truck. It was built by a company I'd never even heard of. White Motor Company.
Yep.
They were built for the national parks around the 1930s, and they were at Yosemite and some other parks in the meantime. Now, when I rode in these, would have been in the mid-90s, it was actually during our honeymoon. We were out at Glacier National Park. So this is before Ford actually went in and like redid them all. So
it's probably still the original.
I think they probably were. They're probably chugging along with the original fuel and probably stinking up the place. But they were pretty cool. So they've since been, I guess the whole body underneath them has been changed into an E-Series van, and they run on propane or gas.
So they're a little more, probably reliable, economical, and safe.
I think the reliability is probably the biggest thing.
Probably got like actual brakes on them now. That's the thing with the old stuff. The old buses and things like that are neat, but you know what happens when something goes down and you got a bus full of 30 people?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's probably a smart move. They still look original, right?
Yeah. I believe so. I mean, I don't think they've changed anything as far as the chassis goes. And they're really cool because they're open cabs. So it's kind of like the Fiats with the cloth tops.
Yeah.
You literally have this giant bus with a canvas top that comes off. So you could stand up while it's driving down the road. And I remember one of my favorite pictures I took, I stood up with my camera, and it was just this long straight road in front of us in the mountains and from the cab of that thing. Pretty
turned
cool.
Turned out nice.
Yeah. As far as film cameras go, because it was the 90s, I don't even know if I could find
it. You didn't have a digital camera back in?
No. If I did, I had that Mavica thing. You remember those?
Yeah, to hold like three shots on the disc.
Yeah.
A little floppy.
It used a floppy. I thought that was so progressive. Like, look, I could take it out of this and put it in my computer.
And it's the same picture. It's like two pixels. Well, that's cool. So you got the Red Jammers at Yosemite.
Yeah.
And then does Glacier and the Grand Canyon? I thought there's a couple of those
types
of bus things.
I think Grand Canyon had some. That led to my question. I mean, are there any other vehicles that are unique to national parks or certain areas of the country? Of course, we've talked about ducks before. They're everywhere.
Yeah, a little scary.
But there's got to be some other unique vehicles like that. Trolleys in some places and stuff like that. I think maybe it's something to, if there's any feedback or stuff we look through.
If you're an avid traveler, you've been to some place where they got some neat vehicles, let us know. Share some pictures. We'd love to see them. The only thing that comes to mind, Eric, for me is that incline railroad stuff that, like in Lookout Mountain and stuff down in Tennessee and the Smokies, where they have just kind of one-off.
Like the vehicles that have like the seats all set in weird angles and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's got to be some stuff. The Red Jammers can't be unique in that way.
No, and at some point, we'll talk about the buses. I've got a couple friends that have been to Panama and Costa Rica, and what happens there on the buses is quite interesting. So we'll save that for a future show.
Yeah. So, Daryl, how do you get your Christmas tree? Do you get a real tree or do you get a fake tree?
We did real trees all the way up until about 2 years ago when we just decided that... And I hate being this way because I love real trees. It's like when I walk into a house.
I got a fake tree. You're not going to hurt my feelings.
Well,
I'm Bah Humbug.
Well, that's true. But it's like when you walk into a house and there's a gas fireplace. You're like, okay. You know, like, it's not the same. But for ease of use and everything, especially when they came out with LEDs, I'm like, you're not having to chase burned out bulbs. So we do the fake tree now, but we used to go to the local places. We didn't chop our own. Do you chop your own?
I don't anymore, but we had done that before in years past.
Yeah.
Go out there with the bow saw, and I got that brand new chainsaw. I don't know if you saw pictures of it. I got a steel Wood Boss or whatever it is, Farm Boss.
Pretty handy.
It's a nice saw.
Yeah.
But I don't think they allow you to go out there with the chainsaw because I don't think they would be liable.
And just totally crush it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, at some point... it'd be nice to kind of get back into the natural thing, but I don't know. I just hate vacuuming all the leaves. And
We used to live near Christmas Tree Farm in Green Valley, and you'd see all the cars come by with the Jeeps, with the roof racks, with the big tree on there and all that. I'm like, man, there's just something iconic about that.
Yeah.
That's just a throwback, a cast off,
You could get that Plymouth wagon and throw a tree on top of it, and that could be your family Christmas card.
You know what?
Just saying.
Well, there was a Celica GTS that just came up for sale down in Lincoln last week, and then my wife would let me buy that, so I doubt she's going to let me buy that $22,000 Plymouth wagon.
Yeah, probably.
But someday, Daryl, when my kids are out of college and...
You'll have that.
And I just don't care about life anymore. But I'll probably get what I finally want.
You'll get the Celica, and then you can't drive it because you can't get fuel.
I'll sciatica, and I can't move my leg.
It can happen.
Are we ready for the cars of the week?
Yeah, let's talk about some weird cars of the week. This is, again, a couple weeks ago, so I don't know if this is still for sale, but on the Craigslist here in Peoria, I'm a sucker for old fire trucks. I don't know why. It's probably the four-year-old in me. I think they're all filled with candy.
Do you have a fire hat around here somewhere you run around the house in?
No, not anymore. I'm not allowed to wear it in the house. But on the Craigslist, there was a 1980 Mack MCMR fire truck, which is the kind of the flat-nose cab-over. It was kind of an iconic fire engine for a long time. It also was a very common garbage truck in cities, so they kind of used
that
same...
This thing does not look like a 1980. It looks far more modern than that to me.
Yeah, they don't think they've really changed. It's funny how technology, I'm sure, is applied to like fire apparatus, but realistically, it's just a big box, on a big chassis. But this thing is it's not a super long one. It's just a little pumper. And it was the one, if anyone is in Peoria or went to the old Peoria Chiefs games at O'Brien Field or whatever it's called now, Dozer Park, this was the one that sat out front. And
is this local?
Yeah.
Oh.
So at some point, I don't know when, but they got rid of it. I don't know if it was just they didn't have any use for it or what, but it kind of tied in with their theme of Chiefs, like fire Chiefs.
Yeah.
I don't know. So they got rid of it, and now it is for sale for $3,500, and it's actually really nice condition wise. At least,
is this a ladder truck or just a pump truck or
I
what?
I think it's just a pumper.
Okay.
But it's got a big 11-liter twin-turbo Maxxadine diesel.
Wow.
And I'm sure that it would still probably, with a little bit of work, you know, go back into service. But I don't know. I would, for $3,500, if I had a farm, Eric, if I had a bunch of acreage, I would just, $3,500, I would buy that thing.
You just drive around, pump water for your neighbors. Hey, right. You guys okay on water over there?
You guys good? All right.
You got a pool need filled? I'm here.
I don't know what I would do with it, except drive around and turn the siren on. But, yeah, $3,500, people blow that at the casino sometimes. So, you know, for, you know, impulse buy, that would be mine for this week.
I was on Main Street in Peoria a couple days ago, and the fire guys were out driving around. And it was right by the library. And they had to turn that corner by Hamilton or whatever. And I think I watched him make like 30 turns of the steering wheel in order to make that thing go around the corner.
Yeah, they usually got the big beefy guy driving the thing. Exactly. Even with Hydro Boost and all that, it's still gonna take a toll.
Yeah. Now I'd also heard that 100,000 miles is like the limit for a local fire engine or something like that, and then they can them. So
yeah, I think it depends on the jurisdiction.
Okay.
And here in Peoria, with the budgetary issues that are going on, I mean, I've seen some of those ladder trucks with visible rust on the hinges and things where it all pivots. And,
yeah.
You know, I've said to a couple of my friends who are firefighters, like, dude, what's the deal with that? Aren't you supposed to? Like, we don't have any money.
Yeah.
So, you know, when those things do get into disrepair, then when you need to call on them, and, you know, hydraulic hoists don't work or things like that, then everybody's going to be all ticked off. So, you know, it's good to see cities take care and maintain their fleet, but at some point, you do need to rotate them out and get something newer in there.
Yeah, of course, that's a hot button in Peoria right now because the Peoria firefighters are on the offensive right now trying to get money because the city council gave them a cut or something like that. Yep. So, of course, they go right to, you know, if you cut the fire budget, you know, who's going to save your life in that time of need? And right. It's like, we can't cut the firefighter.
It's hard
budget.
To argue.
Yeah, it is.
I do not want to burn to death.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that.
So I said on this one, Daryl, you need this one. I think you have enough space in the driveway.
Yeah, well, for now. For now.
And I think this is cheaper than the Tahoe.
It actually was. It was, like I bought it. Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's fine. Sitting out there now.
If you pulled into work every day with one of these, it would be amazing.
I would love to just go to a drive through. And just see what happens.
Yeah, well, at first you'd probably rip the roof off the truck.
The whole canopy falls.
That 9-foot limit, I think you'd be taking over that.
Probably.
Dude, just one tire on this thing is probably $3,500.
That's exactly why I'm not going to buy it.
Okay.
What are you going to buy here? It looks like 1990s. Speaking of things that were built in Bloomington Normal.
Yeah.
The Eagle Talon.
So was the Talon built here as well?
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't know if that was there was ever a Detroit factory for these or not.
No, they were all built. The Eagle Talon, Mitsubishi Eclipse, and the Plymouth Laser, which nobody remembers. The Plymouth Laser.
I remember
Laser.
The Laser. But the Laser didn't have the cool all-wheel drive turbo.
You could get it. It was called the RS.
Could you?
Yeah.
In a Plymouth? I didn't know that.
It's very rare. But yes.
Yeah, so the Eagle Talon, man, Eagle Talon to me, I'm trying to remember what year it was, probably about 1990, 1991. I was living in Florida, and it was my dream car. If you could get one of those in like a solid white, but then it had like this glass roof with black trim, and it just looked like a giant sheet of glass over the top of the car. I loved that car.
They did have nice lines. The dash was kind of cool and curved real like neat ground effects on it.
Yeah, I think you could tell a certain style of cars I like from everything I always
cars with flip up headlights. Yeah. That's what Eric likes.
Exactly. So there's a guy who has one for sale on Craigslist, and it's since been sold or pulled off since we posted this on here. But
seized. It was seized.
Yeah, this one was all wheel drive. It's actually a rally car, and of course it has this whole lineage on it. You know, second overall, second in class, and the central. Upper Peninsula Rally in 2018, Eric Hill's old car. It's ready to roll for rally. I mean, it's roll caged out. Oh, man.
What was the asking price?
I went to look at the ad later and it was gone. Okay. I do believe this car was about 10 grand.
I was going to say, under 10, I think you'd be doing okay.
Yeah. And then you and I'd be rallying, Daryl.
Those have a cult following still to this day. They are fun. I had a friend of mine in my early 20s, I had two friends of mine, actually, that bought and modified and raced those things, and they are way quick. I know everyone likes to rip on, you know, the Japanese race car stuff, you know, like Fast and Furious. If you get one of those cars, especially with the all-wheel drive, and you get it set up properly, those things are almost untouchable until you start bringing serious money.
Yeah.
The trouble is they don't last. You have a lot of fun, and it's a Mitsu, so it's cheap hardware. So, you know, things
first
like...
First pothole, you're putting a wheel bearing on it or a lower control arm or something like that.
And a lot of them did meet their fate, you know, unfortunately in the second or third owner where it's, I'm just going to turn the boost up and blow it up. But if you knew what you were doing and you were smart about it, you could have a heck of a fun time with those things, especially on a road course.
Yeah. Now, I keep finding more and more cars that are my dream cars. So as we keep rolling through this show... I think I'm going to figure out that I've had a lot of dream cars I didn't realize over the years.
Yeah, it's okay. You know what? It's these are attainable dreams.
Yeah, they are. If your dream car is a $10,000 car, I think you're doing it right.
I think so.
I don't think my dream car is ever going to be a $100,000 ride. So
No.
That's not my style. All right, so we're getting towards the end of the show here. The riffing zone. Daryl, bulletproof cars. Where did this come from?
I don't know. I like to put myself in like the Walking Dead shoes or you know, like the apocalypse, end of the world. You have to go to one of the coasts because that's where the boats are going to be to take you to, you know, where the next planet is. Or I don't even know what stupid scenario is spinning around in my head after I've had a couple White Castles at 3 a.m. But if you had to pick a car that would be like the car you could just jump in and you knew you could drive to the end of the earth and not have any problems, so, you know, suppose you still got gas and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I just like picking those bulletproof cars that are just tanks when it comes to maintenance, reliability, and you know, could plow through stuff. So I don't know. Your choice for something like that. If you had to get rid of the zombie apocalypse and take the family to safety, you chose a Unimog?
I think Unibog is the way to go.
I think that's a safe bet.
Well, first off, they have to have a reach. I mean, unless they got a 4-foot jump, I mean, you're going to be safe for a lot.
Don't you need a ladder to get into it?
Pretty much, yeah.
Throw down a rope ladder.
So Unimog is a giant industrial military vehicle from Europe, and I think they're pretty popular in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And when you see videos of these just giant trucks rolling with tires. I don't even know what size these tires would be. They're almost like John Deere tractor tires.
Ginormous.
Yeah, they're huge. And usually at 4 wheels on the ground, they've got to be a roll hazard. But you'll see some guys now in the off-road sector start to use them. And that's definitely the guy who's got way too much money.
Yeah,
just right. Wants to be out there playing with a vehicle that one repair would cost more than your vehicle possibly. But
it's a big V12 or something.
Yeah. And does Mercedes have something to do with those?
I thought they did. I'm not 100%, but I thought they
either.
Did make them.
Yeah, so I think the Unibog is mine. But you got a list here. I mean, you got, and actually, the 3800 V6 is a great choice.
Well, I thought so. My mom had an Oldsmobile with that motor, and a couple of my friends in high school did. In high school, you know, kids do dumb stuff with their parents' cars, and I felt bad because all of my friends at the time had, like, Delta 88s or Park Avenues or the Sabres that had that same motor, and those things just took a lot of abuse and kept on running flawlessly.
I've seen LeSabres go 500,000 miles on that 3800.
Yeah. The body's rusted out.
Oh, the car is garbage, but toast. The engine's a sewing machine.
It is.
How is it possible that engine didn't just last forever? I mean, why would you ever change it?
Yeah, I think they didn't for like 30, you know, some odd years. So, I mean, and then of course somebody probably said, you know, we can do better, and now everything's
crap. Engine is too heavy. We could get more efficiency if we lighten it up. Yeah,
I think when Olds came out with like the Intrigue, I think they put a 3.5 in it. It was all new, and those are all garbage. They all seize up and stuff. Speaking of Mercedes, any Mercedes diesel car from the 70s or 80s, like an SD300 SD, or even just a non-turbo. You know, old school Benz.
The stinkier the diesel, the better, I think.
Those things, too. I mean, I've seen a lot of cars around here. Well, winter beaters, you know, guys would buy an old Benz for like a grand, and then they'd drive it for 10 years, and then they'd sell it for a grand.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like these things change hands, and nobody loses money, unless you're the unlucky one who has to...
like, do the overhaul?
Completely overhaul it. But for the most part, you change the fuel filter, and you keep up on the maintenance, and those things will just run.
Yeah, it's like my Kubota tractor. It's a diesel. I do believe I'll be able to sell it for the $3,500 I paid for it 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It just is what it is, right?
Workhorse.
Those old Benzes, man, especially the more rounded you get.
Yeah.
God, man, I love them.
I do, too. There was one for sale in Morton a couple years ago, and I was looking at that. And
was it a coupe?
No, it was a four-door, beige, that, you know, kind of gross prosthetic limb beige. But I passed just because I'm intimidated by anything diesel and German. So
a friend of mine bought a brown coupe, and it was a diesel, and it just looked like so much fun. But then I watched him posting pictures of repacking wheel bearings. And
that's murder. Have you seen that?
It didn't look pleasant.
redoing the bearings and then the brakes.
Yeah, that's what he was doing. And he was doing it himself. I'll give him credit. He probably learned a lot. He learned a lot of stuff he'll never have to use ever again in his life, probably.
Right. Yeah, there's like two or three-piece rotor and hub assemblies. And
yeah. God bless him.
Forget that. We also got some Japanese stuff in here, Eric, including mid-'80s Honda Accords. I know Honda later, like early 90s, when they kind of got...
Flip-up headlights.
Yes, they do. This is Eric's wheelhouse. Prior to the early 90s, they were great cars. They had a little stretch there where they had some transmission trouble, I think.
Yeah, that's been off and on with Honda for years. I don't know why.
And then the 91 to 96 Toyota Camry, 92 to 6, I guess, right?
Yeah, so that was that rounded body style. The 91 was the last of the small body Camry.
Okay. Those are good, too.
It was a good engine, good car, but the body itself wasn't very durable. That was back when they used to have those half-ass seatbelt retractors that would go up.
Oh, the motorized?
Yeah. And go, up the side.
And they cut your hand off.
Exactly. Yeah, there was no safety override on those things.
Not at all.
But no, that's a good engine, especially the four-cylinder. I always say any old four-cylinder that Toyota made is usually pretty good.
Pretty rock solid.
Yeah. And then the Astro. I think for our Christmas episode, Daryl, you and I are going to do like Astro memories.
Astro, I think we should. We'll have like the crackling fire in the background.
Yes.
We'll regale everybody with the tales because Eric and I both grew up with a Chevy Astro in the family.
The conversion.
You got the conversion. You got the nice one.
Yeah. From Strickland Chevrolet in Bloomington, Illinois, we had a jet black one with a 4.3 liter. Holy smokes, man. Love that van. Had the little ladder on the back.
In case you need to put some luggage up there.
Right.
Those are fun.
Yeah. I don't think you could even stand on that thing without ripping off the side of the thing.
Probably not. You just fall right through.
But you guys just have, what, a standard, just a regular passenger van?
The first one was an 88. It was like a CS. Yeah. And then the other one was, it wasn't the LT. It was a CL. So it had, it didn't have the captain's chairs, but it had the nicer velour seats and stuff. And it was great.
I'm going to ask my mom to dig through the photo albums and see if we can find a picture of the van.
We'll do that. We'll do that and put it on our Facebook page, our website.
Oh, I feel so sorry for all of you out there. This is, you tuned in so you could hear about Astro vans.
Vans are cool, especially in Japan right now. We'll talk about that probably in the same show. We can do a whole van, a Vantastic Christmas.
Fantastic.
We could talk about Previas, supercharged Previas.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's actually some fun ones that some guys in Arkansas are running around with. We got lots to share.
Lots and lots. And I might even be able to get some info. I got a friend of mine who races a Honda Odyssey. So we'll see. Folks, vans.
Did you see Fastest Car?
No. On Netflix?
Netflix?
No.
Honda van and that.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
See, you know, vans are making a comeback, folks.
I wouldn't say that. He didn't quite do that well. But it's interesting. Very interesting. There's a cult. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. Speaking of Jim Jones, it's been a wonderful get back in the saddle here, Eric. So we'll make this a routine.
Studio B.
Studio B. This is the alternate, the underground bunker, if you will.
Does this mean you get to produce the show, Daryl?
Sure. How do you do that? I'll figure it out. Anyways, I'm Daryl Scott for Eric Stahl. Happy Turkey Day or whatever time of year it is you're listening to this at. I don't know.
We'll see you next time.